again, everybody, and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I am Eric Steven, and with me, as always, is Jacob Birch. Hello, Jacob.
Hello.
How are you?
It's been a shitty day. Shitty year.
So
I think this is the first time I've broken the explicit tag.
Whoa, that is true. This is an important podcast. I would say the main thrust of today's podcast, there's baseball for sure, but most of it is about not baseball, which is different for us. The Dodgers and Giants decided not to play on Wednesday, and I think the how and the why are just as important as the decision itself. And we will talk about this more after the break.
Yeah, thank you for doing the intro. I woke up not wanting to record, but you had already written lots of nice show notes, and I think there's a lot that I'm sure most of our listeners know, and I'm sure most of them know how we stand on this, if it wasn't obvious from the intro. Yesterday, when Dodgers and the Giants, along with a lot of other major teams, decided not to play. You and I were talking, called it one of the most important days in the franchise. I think it's going to go down as one of the most significant days in American sports. And if it's not obvious, you and I enthusiastically applaud the Dodgers and the NBA players and everyone for doing what they did. I suggest to anyone listening to this who hasn't already, they took a break so people like us would think and would meditate and would take another day kind of out of routine to really think about what's going on. And if you haven't done that, do so and try to do so a little bit every day. I think that's what I said when we had to do a podcast like this a month ago, 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So just do that. We're gonna cover everything. I'm gonna be a little in the dumps, but that's okay.
Yeah. So another weird part about this is like we did alter our recording schedule not because of like the events of this week, mm-hmm. but more because I'm not available this weekend. We've been moving recordings to weekends. And we were going to record like an earlier one this week anyway. So we really only have, we would have only had like four games to talk about.
Yeah, if you were available this weekend, I'm pretty sure there was a delay for sure because I'm only half here.
And so, but that like plays into this. But so that's why there's like the non-baseball to baseball ratio, but it's still important on a baseball level, I think, in a lot of ways. But yeah, so like how this all happened. Sort of the latest like incident was Sunday in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Jacob Blake, a black man, he was shot 7 times in the back by police, and then that started protests in the city and all around the country. Now, like we don't necessarily need to get into like I don't like this doesn't need to be like a point counterpoint about who was at fault. The point is, a black man was shot 7 times in the back. The most common argument is that Blake was armed with a knife, even though reports say he didn't have a knife. He may have been reaching for a knife, but that's like not that important to me because he was also, again, shot 7 times in the back. However, the other overarching issue is during the protests. There was a 17-year-old white militia member who was walking down the street unimpeded with an AR-15. He actually was later arrested on suspicion of first-degree homicide after video showed him shooting 2 people. There was also video that showed like cops handing him water and saying, "We appreciate you being here," along with some other militia members. And that's sort of the point, right? It's not that like, look, it's pretty obvious like that you don't, this isn't something like to take sides on. The whole point is that that police are treating white people differently than they are black people. Yes, there are, quote, you know, you can't, there might just be a certain number of bad cops or good cops or whatever, but just systemically, and the numbers like bear this out, black people are treated less humanely than white people.
And it goes beyond the police into other systems that just perpetuate the vicious cycle.
Right. And so, like, and it goes, like, beyond that. And, like, the whole point of this is to sort of listen to what the, like, black people are saying. Like,
and don't get immediately dismissive about it. I think that's a thing that I've been seeing a lot, is just how quick, and this is so easy to do on the internet, and I get that. But, like, remove yourself from the internet for a little bit and just take what these black men and women are saying to heart. And I also, real quick, do want to also highlight the WNBA. I forgot to when I was highlighting players. And those ladies have been doing this time and time again, bringing their voice to that. And I applaud them for that as well.
Well, and that gets to sort of the root of all this, is that I really, like, the Milwaukee Bucks sort of got this started, right? They're about a half hour away from Kenosha. So they were affected the most. They also had the first playoff game scheduled on Wednesday. Now, that it didn't happen immediately was part of the – it sort of mushroomed after the protests and then the shootings by the militia sort of snowballed all this. And this has been brewing, and, like, they – you know, black players on the Bucks and just the team in general said enough. They decided to boycott their game. I don't want to keep it was first reported as a boycott. It's technically a strike, right? They're withholding labor, but I don't, the semantics don't matter. They said they're not going to play because we're sick of all this, and they want change to happen. So now you could say they're a sports team, right? Like, what are they going to do? But the fact that they got everyone, like, talking about
labor
it,
strikes have never worked ever,
right? And so that's like a thing. But then that gets to the WNBA point. Like, the Bucks, right? They're up 3-1 in the series, so they were willing to forfeit a playoff game. They're the number one seed in the West. They have the best record in the NBA. They are a NBA title, like, co-favorite ish, you know. So, like, for them to, like, forfeit a playoff game speaks volumes. Like, even if you don't agree with their stance, you have to, like, respect it on the level that they feel so strongly about this that they're willing to sacrifice the one thing, like, their livelihood, basically, to make a stand. And then that gets back to the WNBA players. They have more to lose than NBA players. They get paid far less. You know, there aren't millionaires in the WNBA, at least from their salary in the league. Many might play overseas, but they have to, like, earn real money. And they've been at the forefront of, like protesting and social movements, and with a lot more to lose than, frankly, a lot of other leagues and teams. And, like, they don't get enough credit for it. But so you just have to respect that on that level, right? Like, that they're what they are giving up by doing this. Now, the Orlando Magic, to their credit, said, we're not going to take a forfeit as a win. We'll also not play the game. This sort of snowballed. The other four NBA teams that were playing Wednesday, including the Lakers and Blazers as the night game, they all said they're not going to play. So the NBA sort of came out and said, we're postponing all the games today. I think they're going to, I don't know if it's official, but I think they're postponing all the Thursday games too. So, but I think the playoffs are still going to go on. But, so this is how it all sort of started on Wednesday. Back in March, when the coronavirus, every sport was, like, sort of waiting to figure out what to do as, like, news broke of, like, who got what. And once, like, Rudy Gobert tested positive and then the NBA, like, shut down, all the other sports sort of followed suit. And this is sort of what happened again yesterday. Now, the WNBA ended up postponing their games. The MLS did later as well. That it got to baseball is surprising. The Brewers were playing in Milwaukee, and they decided not to play their game against the Reds. The Reds agreed. Later on, Padres and Mariners also protested, and then the Dodgers and the Giants were the third of three teams to decide not to play Wednesday. I'm surprised this happened. You know, like, baseball is, like, generally, like, slow to these type of things. They don't to embrace, like, meaningful change, right? Like, their usual response to anything that's, like, racist or they're just, when they try to make a statement, their usual MO is, hey, did you remember how we brought in Jackie Robinson and solved slavery? Like, they'll put out a statement that basically touts Jackie Robinson, but then hopefully that'll wash away any what the actual substance is. And so the fact that MLB teams were willing to set out this it speaks volumes. Now, I will say this. It was also handled in a very MLB way. All three games that were postponed last night, they're making up as a doubleheader today. So they're like, what are they really losing? Which brings to the point why they're important, because like they aren't really losing a game, and but they're getting people talking about the issue, which is the entire point of everything. Now, the other side point to this, speaking of Jackie Robinson. Jackie Robinson Day, there was no April 15th game this year because of the coronavirus. There is Jackie Robinson Day, though, and it's actually this Friday, which is exquisite timing. This was planned a while ago. That's the date of 1945 meeting between Robinson and Branch Rickey, when Rickey was sort of testing Robinson to see if he was going to be the guy for him to like break the color barrier, and then they decided, yes, he would be. So that's a very important date, August 28th. So, and then if you think back to opening day, right, like it had a much more corporate feel to like the moments they were putting out there. Like there was coordinated kneeling the Dodgers and Giants did before the anthem, not during the anthem. And then teams were like holding a long ribbon together. You know, that's like usually the extent of MLB's involvement on this. But the fact that, like, I don't know, that just sort of struck me as, like, what MLB usually does, which made yesterday, like, even more important, because teams were actually willing to do much more, and that's, like, an important thing. So how the Dodgers sort of decided, Mookie Betts said, he said, I'll just quote him here. For me, I think no matter what, I wasn't going to play tonight because I had to stand by my guns here. There's a lot going on in the world and change needs to be made. You know, I have to use my platform to get the ball rolling. He added, black people have been fighting this fight for centuries and we haven't really gotten anywhere. I think having the white players and people in general to help push it, I think change can be made. But it's going to take all of us, not just one group. And I think that's sort of the important part of all this. After like Mookie Betts like told the team he wasn't playing, that's so they started like talking at this point, and they said, what do we do? And they, you know, talked for a while. Clayton Kershaw, the Dodgers, like, this all happened. It was weird because like there was a lot of unknown going on before the game. Like there were rumors that they were going to cancel it, and then around when the teams would normally take batting practice, nobody was on the field. So everyone thought they were just going to cancel it. But then, like, the Dodgers, like, 85 minutes before the game, they put out their lineup, which is about 2 hours later than usual. But the fact that they put out a lineup, they're like, wait, are they going to play tonight? This is weird timing. But then about 45 minutes before the game, they ended up saying it was postponed. But getting back to the decision part of it, Clayton Kershaw was part of the press conference along with Kenley Jansen, Mookie Betts, and Dave Roberts that sort of explained this, and I thought that was sort of important, showing like a unified front as a team. Kershaw, he was outspoken in July. The Dodgers released a video with several white players saying, like, we need to do more. A lot of the players on the team donated to various black charities, and like this is sort of Kershaw and his teammates like putting their money where their mouth is. And then yesterday he said, as a white player on this team, what's something tangible we can do to help support our black brothers on the team? And just adding here, that includes, in addition to Mookie Betts, there's Dave Roberts, manager, Travis Smith, strength and conditioning coach, and first base coach George Lombard. So those are the people included there. Back to Kershaw. Once Mookie said he wasn't going to play, that really started our conversation. We felt the best thing to do was to support him, was to not play with him. So we made a collective decision not to play tonight and to let our voices be heard for standing up for what we believe is right And that's what it comes down to. We just wanted to do the right thing as a team. So the other part of this was Dave Roberts said he wasn't going to manage Wednesday, even if the team had voted to play. And he had the full support of the organization. He said, this is very personal to me. My cousin was shot and killed. My father was one of the first black men at his high school, and he had many fights and many threats. So, like, you know, this runs deep to a lot of, like, black people, whether you're in baseball or not. I think, you know, just about everybody has a story that they were looked upon differently because of the color of their skin. So just the fact that this keeps happening has to be incredibly frustrating, more so when you've lived through it like they have. Now, what also stood out to me yesterday is that this is also a change from earlier in the year. So back to opening day, when they had the coordinated kneeling before the anthem on the field. During the national anthem, Mookie Betts knelt during the anthem as well, but he was the only Dodger to do it. Standing by his side were Max Muncy and Cody Bellinger, because I believe that was the order of the lineup that night, and they both put their hand on his shoulder, but it's like, you know, that's, it's not like as supportive as like saying we're not going to play with him. So I think that that's sort of an important change. Now, what also made it important was that not every team did this, right? But just back to, before I get to that part, the fact that the Dodgers, like, Mookie Betts is, what, 31 games into his Dodgers career. Mm-hmm. And he's pretty clearly, like, already the leader, right? Like, on the team, or a leader, a very strong leader on a team, like, that has a lot of good leaders on it. But I think he's clearly one of the guys, like, now. And it's easy to see, look, he's a great player, obviously. And so that's why they acquired him. But I think that the fact that they, like, fell in love with him, like, the second he got here and then signed him to 12 more years, it's pretty easy to see why they did that. And the fact that the team supported him, I just want to add this other quote from Mookie Betts. Yesterday he said, "I was already tight with everybody in the clubhouse, but now that I know everybody has my back even more than I already thought, means a lot. I'll always remember this, and I'll always remember this team had my back. This organization is nothing but amazing." So that seems pretty, like, significant to me about all this. And it made the, like, the Dodgers, and, well, the, you know, there were six teams that decided not to play yesterday, so it's not just them. But there were other MLB teams that, like, didn't support their black teammates that the way these teams did. Jason Hayward sat out Wednesday, but the Cubs played. Jackie Bradley Jr. sat out. The Red Sox played. Dexter Fowler sat out, but the Cardinals played. Now, Jack Flaherty, to his defense, who's also been outspoken about issues, a white teammate, he's a starting pitcher. He actually pitched Monday, so he wasn't going to play anyway. But the fact that he also sat out in solidarity is important, symbolically at least. Matt Kemp, old friend alert, he sat out, but the Rockies played. He wrote on Instagram, "We must stand together, speak out, protest, and be the change we demand, require, and need so bad. I'll be protesting tonight's game in honor of my fallen brothers and sisters at the hands of police brutality." Dominic Smith of the Mets sat out, but the Mets played. He had, I don't know if you've seen this, he talked post-game, and there's been video, like, posted online. Just absolutely poured his heart out, man. He was in tears. Just one of the highlight quotes, he said, "The most difficult part is to see people still don't care." And, like, just imagine feeling that and, like, just the weight of that. And you could just see it on his face. And, like, that, like, kind of broke me, honestly, like, just watching it. So that is why, like, all this is important, right? Like, it's treating black people with the respect they deserve and what many of them clearly feel they don't get.
And believing the lived experiences they're telling you they have.
Right,
that's been,
exactly.
That's been the thing that I think has been most frustrating to me, is just how many people are so quick to get defensive against what just this giant lived experience we're being told occurs, and people are just like finding every little bit of minutia to try and maybe either explain it or excuse it, and just stop talking, listen to what they're saying, and try to feel what they're feeling. Spend the day doing that.
And that was sort of the other sort of important part of like just of stepping back and postponing and sitting out a day. It gives you, it gives the team, it gives us, it gives everybody time to listen, right? Like just stop, listen, like do what's important. But yeah, so like like where we go from here, like I don't know. Like I think that what this did to me is that it showed that like players and this in baseball are like willing to use their platform. Just I think during the shutdown and like when a lot of the other protests were happening around the country, like a lot more players were speaking out on this than they usually do. And during the labor negotiations, the same. I think players are realizing like they have a voice, and I think the fact that they use it, that feels powerful, like really powerful. Now, speaking of like the Dodgers following bets, so yesterday, part of the one of the quotes was they like I think Kershaw mentioned this, Mookie Betts mentioned this, I think Dave Roberts mentioned this, that like this was about tonight, we'll figure out tomorrow, right? Because everyone's like, well, are you going to play tomorrow? And then no one would really answer, like they're just like, I guess. But Kershaw said, you know, we'll. I think if Mookie plays tomorrow, then I think we're going to play, but we'll figure it out then. But then, so today they're playing a doubleheader, and as we're recording, the Dodgers put out their lineup, and Mookie Betts wasn't in the lineup that they put out. But then, so we're thinking, wait, like, whoa, all right, what's going on here? And, you know, he, in theory, could have been getting one game off because they're playing two. Maybe he's only playing one of the two. That's normal. But then the Dodgers, like as we were already started recording, they released an updated lineup which has Mookie Betts in it. So stand down, people. There's no controversy just yet. But yeah, that's sort of, so that's where we're at. Like it's like I think 2020 in a lot of ways has diffused any chances of taking things for granted anymore. Like you just assume like baseball seasons are 162 games long. Like normal things happen normally. Like it just, you just can't assume what you're used to, right? Like you just figure it out day by day, and that's sort of where we're at. and like I think more things like this will probably happen, and I'm shocked that we're at this point, but also like kind of excited about it. I don't know. It's weird. I don't know like what else is going to happen like this year. Maybe
I don't want the fact think that
you're right. You're right. Exactly. Like you just don't know. But I just think the fact that more people are realizing like they have power to like try to make change.
Yeah,
like,
that's fair. I shouldn't be so cool immediately pessimistic.
I know what you mean. Right.
Because yeah, I agree. This feels powerful, like just everything that's been going on. There's a lot of grieving and there's a lot of tumultuousness and just pain, but change is in the air, and I've felt that more this year than ever before.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of change, we're gonna talk some actual baseball. Okay. After this.
Yeah, I haven't been. I watched the games Wednesday and Tuesday, but it's kind of not in my memory. So why don't you catch me up on the baseball part of things?
Yeah, so we missed all of three games since we recorded last, and I think by the time this posts, like there probably will be at least two games, if not three, more played. So we're not going to like go into this is their exact record at this point, but like. They did sweep the Rockies. They hit seven home runs on Sunday. Just a crazy game where the ball was flying out. They had a weird game Tuesday in San Francisco where part of this is the extra inning rule, But, like, it was such a weird game. But the Dodgers blew leads in the 9th, 10th, and 11th innings to lose that game. But it also had, like, two very bizarre plays involving Justin Turner when they scored the go-ahead run. One was he was the free runner on second, and he took third on a pass ball. But Joey Bart then threw it into left field, so he scored. And then in the 11th, where there's a man on third with two outs, and Turner, like, hit a little squibber, like, in between first base and the bag. And he did this awesome, like, little, looked like a two-step dance move to, like, avoid the diving Tyler Rogers pitcher trying to tag him. And so Turner's safe at first, and then they scored the go-ahead run, and then ultimately the Giants came back and won. But it was just a very weird game. But the fun, another weird fun part about this season, fun in quotation marks, as of this morning, the Dodgers are the one seed in the West, they're in the National League, and the Giants are the 8th seed. So if the first round, if the season stopped today, that would be the first round matchup. Now, another thing that happened just this morning before we recorded, Walker Buehler, who was scheduled to start the second game of the doubleheader on Thursday, was placed on the injured list. He has a blister in his right hand. Not sure exactly how long that's going to take, but he could actually start by late next week if it's the minimum time on the list. So that's not, it might not be that bad. We'll see, but blisters can be weird. The other weird part about this season is the trade deadline is only 4 days away. And like it does in many ways seem like the season just started, but it's also more than halfway over at this point too. So now the other important thing that happened in that Sunday game, Mookie Betts, he hit two home runs. He also stole two bases. He's the first Dodger ever to do this. There's only been 19 games in modern MLB history with two homers and two stolen bases. Now, there have been 20 Dodgers, including Betts, with two home runs and one steal in a game. Mm-hmm. Who's the only player with more than one game?
So I have a list of like four or five names. If I get, mm-hmm. if it's on it here, let me just ask this: do you think it's an obvious name?
No.
Dang it.
It's a player that has played in your lifetime.
Okay. I'll say my obvious names that are Ron.
Okay.
And then you'll tell me who it actually is. How about that? Yep. I shouldn't have asked that. My hopes have been dashed because all of my names are very obvious. Matt Kemp.
Matt Kemp does not have one game.
Interesting. I was like really confident once he had at least one. Interesting.
Yeah.
Duke Snider. Did not play my lifetime for what it's worth, but I'm guessing anyways.
Yeah, you got to say it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, he does not have one game.
Man, can I get one with one? Raul Mondesi.
He has one.
Okay.
So
kind of end now, on a high note. Tell me who it is.
Todd Hollinsworth. Now, what I found sort of also
he's going to come up later today. By the way, just a
right.
Hint.
I was going to say something before we recorded. Then I realized I couldn't say that because it would give away. Because I did see one of the questions we'll get to later that mentioned his name. A couple other like very odd names on this list. Marlon Anderson had a game. Mike Marshall, the outfielder, had a game. Don Newcomb, a pitcher, had a game.
That's amazing.
With two home runs and a steal.
Was he known as a good hitter for a pitcher?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Like he hit seven home runs one year.
Okay.
Yeah, he was really good. Excellent.
Madison Bumgarner.
I don't remember the exact number, but they pinch hit him like 20 times a year in some years. Like, so he was really good. Maury Wills had a game. I wonder if both of those were out of the park, I mean. Now, the other weird part about the semi-weird part, the 19 players that were not Mookie Betts on this who had two home runs and two steals, every single one of these games is two home runs and one steal. The Dodgers don't have like a a three home run, one steal, or anything like that. I was sort of looking for that. That would have also been a weird thing. But yeah, that's the our little trivia for today.
Well, what else is going on in the baseball side of things?
That's kind of it.
I mean, it was all of three games.
Yeah. So, like I said, so the Dodgers finish up a road trip this weekend. They have the trade deadline Monday when they're off.
That's weird.
And I'm sure next week when we'll record, we'll either talk about a pitcher or two that they added, or we'll talk about how boring the trade deadline was. There was a trade earlier today. The Blue Jays acquired Taiwan Walker from the Mariners. But yeah, so trade season is officially upon us.
What, I mean, there's infinite ways this season is strange, but the fact that it's, you know, less than a week away from the deadline, which normally would be one of like a marquee podcast episode, yeah, and we're like, eh, whatever, they're gonna acquire some useful reliever and move on with our life.
Yeah.
Hey, you don't have a Dodgers rewind for us, do you?
No, we're skipping it this week. Part of it was the quick ramp up, and then also I was sort of scrambling this morning, so I didn't come up with one.
But we do have Questions for Greg.
We love them.
Five questions sent to us from our friend Craig. The first one.
I love
one
that
is,
theme song every time.
I know you do. You hear it in your head. I don't actually play it for you. But
no, I hear it. Yeah, I know.
San Diego Padre Jake Cronenworth leads all NL rookies with a 1.3 BWAR. At his current rate, he would finish the season with just over 2 BWAR in 60 games. With that said, my trivia question for Eric, name the three Dodger Rookie of the Year position players that have finished with less than 2 BWAR.
Now I know like it wasn't technically listed here, but that this was clearly on my mind. When the two home run, one steal question came up. But Todd Hollinsworth was the clear first answer to this for me. My other thought was Eric Karros, because his on-base percentage wasn't very good in 1992. And then the actual first name that came to my mind, who wasn't necessarily bad, but he was just a reliever, even though he pitched more innings because that was the style back then. I want to say Steve Howe, but I'm not that so confident in that answer.
The question specifically is position players, so I'll let you mulligan that.
Oh, in that case. okay, so I guess... So Raul Mondesi was the strike year, so I'm going to go with him.
You are correct.
Okay,
Karros, Hollinsworth, and Raul.
Wow, so the even years of the five-year run.
So here's the funny thing. So I got Hollinsworth correct. I did not remember that Raul was a strike year. I think otherwise maybe I'd gotten there. And here's a strange... I was never going to guess captain of all Dodger records, Eric Karros. I didn't realize his on-base was low enough to warrant that. Here is a very weird trivia... like mischeck in my brain whenever this the giant streak. I have Todd Zeal as a Dodger rookie, which he's not. Not a rookie of the year, not a rookie with the Dodgers, barely played with the Dodgers, but for whatever reason, it's probably because I bring it up all the time, Ken Griffey Jr., 64 baseball. He's in that lineup with basically all of the rest of the rookies, so he just gets lodged in my head as that. And then so I wrote down Zeal and immediately crossed it off. I'm like, no, you know this. Stop it.
Now, so because I'm a little older than you, I remember his Donruss rated rookie card. I want to say 1990 Donruss, but like, so those, that was like a huge deal, getting the rated rookie card. So that is sort of Brennan, so I can sort of see where you're coming from.
He did also take six in Rookie of the Year for the Cardinals, but hey.
You're right. But also, like, but, you know, Hollinsworth, Zeal, they're both named Todd.
And they were back-to-back in said Ken Griffey Jr. lineup.
Oh,
and so I think it's just, yeah, it just gets stuck.
If we're using modified Jeopardy rules, where, like, you could just say the last name of someone on Jeopardy and get it right, you could just say the first name. you just say Todd, and then you're covered. Yeah.
All right. Second question. Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger could be the best defensive outfielders the Dodgers have had for some time. That got me thinking. Who would I pick as the best defensive Dodger players by position since 2000? And I'll just use plain... and I'll just use... They've played at least one half season with the Dodgers as a qualifier. And that's for Mookie's benefit. So yeah. Eric and Jacob, pick your teams. I have a really good guess who your third baseman and maybe shortstop will be, but interested in the rest. Casey Blake is who he's referring to for third base. No, yeah. Not so much. So let's do this as a team. Let's work on this together. I don't feel like competing here.
I think it's pretty obvious, right? Like third base and shortstop is Beltre and Asturias.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's for I think we're.
I'm like, yeah, that sounds fine.
Now, for me, so for second base, like, you want to say, like, everyone involved on that 2003 team because they were the worst team in baseball history when they were batting, but they were the best team in baseball history when they were pitching, and that included the defense. So, like, I want to say Alex Cora for second, mm-hmm. but then the only thing that would give me pause on that is that maybe Kike Hernandez sneaks in there for a body of work for a little bit longer time. But I'm willing to like be swayed either way on that. I don't feel that strongly about one or the other.
I keep wanting to make the worst defensive team. Like, what about Jeff Kent? Can we put Jeff Kent there? He was always, I think, a little like not under, like, I think he was sometimes better than people realized, like, despite the stone feet, but Cody Bellinger be on this list twice at first and center?
So thinking back to your list, that's if Jason Phillips isn't our first baseman.
Yeah, that's fair.
I really enjoyed the footwork of Adrian Gonzalez. I don't think his defensive numbers were all that great. And James Loney, probably the same. Mm-hmm. Like he had a reputation for being great, and I do think he was pretty smooth generally. I would probably go Adrian Gonzalez over Loney, but it's probably splitting hairs, and maybe because I'm not remembering someone else. But yeah, like or like you say, Bellinger twice. trying to think of like if someone else like really stood out. Carl Crawford, like in left field, like. The one healthy season he had with the Dodgers was very good. I don't know if that's enough to like put him on here.
Right.
That's tough.
Pitcher Greg Maddux
or Greinke.
Yeah.
Maybe Greinke. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think left is the hardest though. Should we do catcher?
Oh,
catcher's so weird. It's like is pitch framing.
I think you have to be able to like throw out runners too. So like that's always tough.
Yeah.
Did they get? We're gonna punt catcher on this one.
I'm tempted to say early Russell Martin, but that might be like. As is the case with a lot of, and this is why defensive metrics are so hard and interesting, it's really difficult to say consistently good defender, but not conflate like the five or six really good defensive memories you have of this. Derek Jeter is like the hallmark of this, someone who has some incredible defensive highlights, but is generally rated very poorly defensively because it doesn't cover, those plays don't cover what the balls he's not getting to. So it's tough. This would be really interesting to like look at using like some of the defensive metrics and kind of look at who was the highest rated. So maybe we'll do that one of these episodes when we don't got much to talk about.
What about Todd Hundley, who could play both catcher and left field? No, I don't know. That's a tough one. Left field, Juan Pierre, when he was over there, was better than when he was in center, I think. This is a really tough one. Maybe I just default to Crawford. I don't really know.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
As this is likely the last podcast before the trade deadline, let's get this in. Will the Dodgers make more or less than two trades by the deadline? Bonus points, how many active roster spots will be affected?
Jeez. What if we just say two? Because they always get a reliever. Like, look, they have a really awesome and really deep bullpen, but they always get a reliever. So, like, I think that's part of it. But I also, like, it wouldn't surprise me if they went and got a starter. Like, Lance Lynn is a name who's been mentioned. I don't really know. Like, they could also go get a right-handed bat, but they're not, like, that hurting for it necessarily. So, I'm inclined to think actually two trades, and if there's two trades, it probably affects, I would say, well, I guess what, I guess two active roster spots, like, because they would be players who would be on the active roster. Is it four because two people are not going to be on the active roster, or is, I think it's just two, right? It's,
yeah,
just two spots affected. Yeah, so I guess it could be one trade getting both and two spots, but I think it's going to be two trades and two spots.
All right, the next question. Corey Seager is playing like the 2015-2017 version of himself. What have you noticed about his game, if anything, that has gotten better since he came back from his surgeries?
So, you know,
I have to look something up before I speak out of turn, so you talk for a bit.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, like, I always look for him about, if he's hitting doubles, that's usually a good sign. He's hitting those this year, but he's also hitting homers. So I think his ability to, like, pull the ball with power, not that he always is a pull hitter, but the fact that he is just occasionally, like, slamming home runs, like, that's when he's sort of at his peak. So I think that's part of it. And also just being healthy enough to, like, make plays in the field. Like, the Dodgers position so well that, like, it sort of skews some of the defensive metrics, and it's hard to figure out what's what, like how much is the player, how much is the positioning, but like he's effective in the field and like not sort of hampered by the various injuries that have hampered him the last couple years. So I think he's just playing like more free and easy this year. I know he had the hamstring thing. He had a couple games with the quad thing too, but like that's just minor stuff. It's not really affecting him. He's still been able to hit. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just how dynamic he is just overall and healthy. So that's sort of the main difference for me.
Yeah, I'm trying to find contact rate, because that was something that just from eye test, like it seemed like so he would go through these stretches so often last year where it was just like first pitch, swing and miss. There was just it's felt like that was a very common outcome, but that's very much anecdotal. I don't have the data to back it up. I do have hard hit rate, which has skyrocketed this year.
Yeah,
he's at 60%, 60.5 this year, and he was at 42.3 the year before, and historically is more in the 40 to 45 range. So, just that seems to be the case, and I'm hopefully I can find some contact data once I have more time to poke around my computer. I'm curious to see if that's up or not.
He's definitely hitting the ball harder. So that's good. You're right.
Last question. Do you like your enchiladas with green or red sauce? And given the choice, what are your favorite styles of salsa to use as a condiment? These include pico de gallo, salsa roja, and salsa verde. But, you know, whatever you want. So we've probably covered this before. I have a likely psychosomatic, but regardless, it exists, cilantro allergy.
Yeah.
I get extremely queasy and massive headaches if I eat more than like a little bit of cilantro. And so this heavily alters, and I love Mexican food. But getting especially street Mexican food, so that goes more to the salsas. Without it can be difficult. Salsas in general are difficult. Trader Joe's salsas tend to not have cilantro, which has been a saving grace for me. And I've found a few places, and when I'm back in LA, if I'm ever allowed to go back to LA safely, that have a lot of dishes without it. So With salsa, it's, again, whichever one doesn't have cilantro, if possible. Otherwise, I'm just kind of SOL. Haven't always had this allergy, and before that, I was a big fan of pico. That would probably be my answer there. And I'm honestly down the middle on enchiladas. I love both. I think I probably get red more often, but it doesn't mean that it's necessarily because I like it more.
I love both as well. I would say of the three choices, I think I would lean towards salsa verde, just generally. But I think when it comes specifically to enchiladas, I sort of like the red sauce with that more than the green sauce, even though either one would be fine. I don't know, maybe it's just a texture thing. It's a little more rich. I don't know why, but yeah, that's sort of where I'm at. Generally green salsa, but probably red sauce for enchiladas.
Okay, that's the episode. We'll have more games to talk about once you get back.
Yep, should be fun. We'll have a trade deadline to talk about. We'll have another week or so worth of games, maybe a little more than a week. And we'll actually have to start transitioning for the stretch run.
Someone tweeted at us, and I don't have the tweet up right now. I apologize. But when is it right to talk about magic numbers? And my initial reaction was, what? And I'm like, oh, no, probably is.
Yeah, like I had that same reaction. Then I actually looked. I'm like, well, to clinch like a playoff spot, it was like in the 20s, and I'm like, that's still pretty high, but it's like also really low, like for given how little they've played. So I don't know. But yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll
real
talk
quick,
to you.
Real quick, yep. I have contact numbers. I'm sort of Ron, except not contact rates are actually roughly the same, or if not worse. But he is swinging way less often at way more often. No, hold on. Way more often. Oh, I'm completely off. Way more often on first pitch swings. I'm out of here. I've got nothing. I'm going to relook at his numbers and see if I'm right at all. Probably not. So,
you know what? I think you should take the rest of the month off, and we'll talk to you everybody again in September.
Okay, I'll take that.